This is a podcast from RTE Radio 1.
Hello, and welcome to Audioscope. I'm Joe Bullard, and I'm sitting in for the regular presenter, Bethan Collins, who can't be with us for today's programme. I have under my fingers a script. It's a Braille script. I learned Braille, I think, I was about four, and I was a pupil at St. Mary's School for the Blind in Merion in Dublin. I've been an ardent Braille user all my life, using it as an aid when working, and using it for correspondence, and of course using it for my education, as well as in my leisure reading. In today's world of advanced assistive technology, Braille is still relevant. Or is it? Oh, but that's another argument for another day. Our programme today deals with the lack of opportunity of young blind pupils attending mainstream schools to learn Braille. It seems there are not enough teachers around to fulfil the needs and demands of people needing Braille skills to keep up with their sighted peers in their schools. Now, we have quite a gathering here today. We've got three people in studio, and we've got two people, as my mother would say, down the country. Right. First of all, we've got Mary. Mary in Limerick.
Oh, yeah, hello, hi, Mary. Joe.
Now, Mary, on a recent programme, your husband was pretty vocal about the lack of facilities for young students learning Braille. Let's see, what's your position? What's the scenario with you? You have a blind son who is?
My son is 13 and he's totally blind. And I'll just start when he started school. And we had to send him for Braille lessons privately ourselves. Now, the Department of Education did fund 20 hours a year for...
Hold on, let's get that. 20 hours a year?
Which is three school days a year.
To learn Braille?
To learn Braille. But, I mean, you had to try and get the money off of them first. And they wanted a qualified teacher to teach him, which was just impossible. Now, his first visiting teacher he had for 4 years, and he was never taught a letter of Braille. His first SNA taught herself Braille and linked with the girl that we had hired to teach him Braille. And only for that, there is no way he would be as Braille literate as he is today.
But why was that? Surely the department, the onus is on the Department of Education to provide Braille instruction.
Well, you would think that that would be the story and the case, but it certainly isn't in our case. As I said, our son was never taught a letter of Braille. Everything we had to do ourselves. We had to teach him ourselves, and we had to get a girl who was actually visually impaired to teach him with the help of the SNA, who taught herself.
Well, if now your son is, what, in secondary
school?
He's
in first year now.
And what about equipment? I mean, did he get Braille writers? Any assistance there?
Any equipment that he got. We had a... The visiting teacher applied for it when he was in fifth class. And when he started in secondary school, let's say last September, his grant had not come through. Now, we had a big argument about the grant because we were told he wasn't entitled to it. The school was told he wasn't entitled.
Did they tell you why he wasn't entitled?
They said he was entitled to a grant of €3,800, which wouldn't buy anything. Now, with a lot of hassle myself, I got on to the head of the technology department and in Dublin, and he was told that he would get his grant. But the grant came 2 years later. We had actually gone and bought all the equipment ourselves for him to go to school.
And what's the position now?
The position now is that the equipment that we paid for, that we bought last year, was only reimbursed 2 weeks ago.
And he is now on a par with his peers in secondary school?
Well, he's not. I know he's got his equipment, but the services and the resources are still not up to scratch.
Does he have a teacher that comes to help him with his Braille?
He's got a visiting teacher that comes, but the problem is there are 11 visiting teachers in the country. And from what I gather, there are only one or two. There's certainly one who are secondary level trained and who are Braille, maths and music literate.
Well, if I can come to Sean McGowan in Waterford. Is that right, Sean?
Sure, it is, yeah.
You're with us.
Yeah.
Can you tell us what your situation is?
Well, I suppose our experience is slightly earlier than Mary's there, in that our daughter Sarah started school a year and a half ago, September 2004. So she's a year and a half into school at this point. Now, she has some vision, navigation vision would probably be the best way of describing it. And with some assistance from a CCTV, she can actually make out words and letters on the screen. But the long-term prognosis is that she will go completely blind sometime between now and the time she hits her late teens, early 20s. So it's essential that, from a long-term perspective, that she has to learn Braille. Her visiting teacher, her first visiting teacher started coming to see her a couple of years before school. So I suppose we've had a teacher now for about four and a half years. Now that first teacher had no Braille himself, but he retired there last June. Now the department, the visiting teacher service in Athlone would have been aware that he was retiring for more than 12 months before that, because he told us as well as them. And the job was advertised in due time to make an appointment for September last, but due to the lack of suitably qualified candidates, there was no appointment made then. And since that time, basically, our responsibility has been seconded to visiting teachers from other areas. Now, we're in Waterford, and the first visiting teacher we got last September was only newly appointed to the Cork area, which is still 90 miles away. So we were kind of getting a teacher second-hand who was new into the Cork area itself. So basically we got a quick assessment visit and nothing else.
Now, how is your daughter's Braille? Has she got any Braille at all?
Now, in terms of Braille, the only Braille that Sarah's learned has been from ourselves, essentially. Now, it's fairly basic. She's got a reasonable grasp on the alphabet at this stage. But she's no flow as such. You know, she literally has to make it out a letter by letter by letter. Now, she's the youngest of four daughters, and I suppose time is probably the biggest constraint we have in terms of teaching ourselves. But
what you're saying to me then, John, is that you have to learn Braille first and then teach it to your daughter.
This is the conclusion we're basically coming to. Okay. Because as it currently stands, the visiting teacher from Cork had to basically transfer the case due to her overwhelming workload. And we're now being serviced by a visiting teacher from Galway.
From Galway to Waterford?
From Galway to Waterford.
Since
that secondment was made there back in January, we've had one visit during which Sarah got 1 hour's Braille teaching, formal Braille teaching.
God, that beggars belief, that.
And that visiting teacher has notified us that she's now retiring next month in April.
I have three guests in studio with me. And first of all, I'm coming to... let me introduce them. I have Patsy Ash, and I have who is from Fayok, Patsy.
Hello there, Joe.
And I've got Mukhtar Cooper from St. Joseph's School for Blind and Visually Impaired. But you're from the Braille Unit, Mukhtar.
That's right, the National Braille Production Centre.
And I've got, of course, a voice that we're all familiar with here on Audioscope, Audrey Tormey.
Hi, Joe.
Audrey, you're a great Braille user.
Yeah, I would be an avid Braille reader and user myself.
Mm-hmm. Patsy, if I could come to you, surely we talk here about FAIOC, right?
Yeah.
You're a member of FAIOC.
Yeah.
FAIOC is the organ. Tell us what FAIOC is.
Well, we're a voluntary group of parents, Joe. And what we try to do is support the parents of blind and visually impaired children nationwide. And by that, of course, we end up supporting them and ending up lobbying for them because so many of the services they require are actually not there. And, you know, listening to Mary and Sean there, it's sad, very, very sad to hear that parents are facing the same sort of difficulties that many others were facing down through the last 10, 12 years. And also I'm aware that their children are at a critical learning age for Braille. You know, catch them young and teach them early and it won't be an issue to them. The other very sad thing, again, is to hear how far stretched the visiting teacher service is. There's a great deal of work that they can do, but if you can only get a chance to visit a child travelling from Galway to Waterford and spend a couple of hours with her, imagine if you were trying to treat a sighted child the same way and teaching them their alphabet and reading skills.
Mm-hmm. Mary, if I can come back to you in Limerick,
yeah.
What do you think the future holds for your son?
Well, I don't know. I've got a son who's very intelligent, and I'm afraid that he's not going to get the education that he deserves. Now, he's got a twin sister, and she's sighted. And, like, there's no comparison. Like, there's just no comparison at all. Like, he should have the same education that she has, and he doesn't.
Do you put this down totally to his lack of Braille knowledge?
I do, and I put it down to the visiting teacher services not having the time to spend with the kids, not having the... not knowing the Braille music, not knowing Braille maths. Like, you don't send a child to school, you know, to be taught by a teacher that doesn't know how to do certain things.
Mukhtar, if I can come to you, we're talking about Braille and lack of Braille. Can you explain to us here a little more about the Braille unit at St. Joseph's School? They provide Braille, surely for children at mainstream schools?
We do. We provide Braille textbooks for children in primary and secondary school throughout Ireland. Mm. They're provided on request.
But there again, it's no good having books if the pupils can't read them.
I
know you're going to say to me, but that's not our fault, Joe. We produce the books, but my
point I'm making. No, I do agree with you. I do agree with you because we have found that, for instance, when we provide Maths Braille, if the child needs help with figuring out the tactile diagrams, it's a specialist skill in itself. Mm-hmm. And we spend a lot of time creating the diagrams, but if the child can't read it, mm-hmm. it's waste.
Audrey, what's your thinking on this?
Well, I'll speak from my personal point of view, and as my background is teaching, as you know, Joe. So, yes, I mean, I think Braille is essential. I came through the primary and second level system as a blind person. I lost my sight at 4. Now, my dad learned Braille and taught me Braille. I'm the eldest of 7, so it must have been difficult for him, but obviously we managed. And I went to university through Braille as well. And to be honest with you, I'd be lost without Braille. I think only for my parents. I mean, we had to, in those early days, buy our own equipment and Perkins and all the rest.
But Audrey, you went on through university. Did you use Braille going there?
Absolutely. I did French and Spanish. And that would be quite specialist from a language point of view as well. I agree with what Mukhtar said about, you know, and what Mary said about the Braille code, you know, maths and music is quite tricky if you don't, you know, read Braille. And, I mean, it's all very well devising diagrams, but they have to be, you know, possibly interpreted by blind people, you know, okay. And, you know, if they're too crammed or too much detail in it, it can be very difficult to trace with your fingers and get the real meaning.
If I can come to Sean down in Waterford. Sean, what do you see for the future for your youngster?
I suppose the first year through school, we were able to live with it in the sense that a lot of the education is done through tactile, and it's less academic. But as Sarah goes through national school and then on into secondary school, we're getting more and more concerned because without the basics of building blocks of education, which has to be reading and writing. And in terms of visually impaired and blind children, that reading and writing is through Braille. You know, you can't educate without that. And so we're basically looking around now. We're having to face up to reality. We've got to do it ourselves, which is, given the resources that the department say are available. We've had a few serious conversations with the visually impaired services up there, and they said the money is there to pay the salaries, but the fact that their attitude seems to be that because the qualified people are not there to take up the positions, that's the end of their responsibility.
Joe, if I may, it's Patsy here.
Yeah.
Hearing Sean describing there that the visiting teacher service were hoping to recruit somebody for his area and that the people simply aren't there. We've in FERC have been trying to promote the idea of a little bit of inter-agency collaboration.
Yeah.
You know, we're really aware that there are excellent people available through NCBI and very, very willing to spread the power of Braille, really. We know that the finances are available in the Department of Education, and yet we're aware that visiting teachers have instructed that NCBI should not be involved with children. We really feel very strongly that there is a resource available and that we very much feel frustrated by this lack of interagency collaboration. I mean, we know that there are people who would volunteer to teach children Braille, appropriate people who would be vetted as being suitable to teach children. And I really would ask both Department of Health and Children and Science to get to, sorry, it's the Department of Education and Science and Health and Children to get together and put their heads together on this one. It's a basic right to be taught how to read and write.
True.
I totally agree with you, Patsy, because we have a girl in the NCBI here in Limerick who taught herself Braille and is absolutely fantastic. But she cannot come into the school because they're the Department of Health, and it makes absolutely no sense.
Could I just say though as well, Joe, like we shouldn't have to volunteer our expertise. I mean, it's a skill, and you know, or anybody with the skill of Braille should be, you know, compensated
absolutely
financially.
Yes.
You know, from the charity.
Nobody's looking, you know, for it to become a charity.
No, but you did say, Patsy, volunteer.
Yes, but they've volunteered their services order. I didn't intend to say that they wouldn't be paid for it. They've actually come forward with a view to saying, here we are, please use us.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no, the thought of having people on board and not paying is
And
not.
Even when you do, even when one does contact a department with kind of expertise in that line, I mean, very often there isn't a response. So, I mean, I have known of people that would have volunteered or, you know, contacted
made them aware that your services are there.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you'd have to wonder why they aren't being taken up on this.
Mary,
do
you feel that the organisations for and of the blind people should get involved in this? Apparently they're not.
I think everybody should be involved. It shouldn't just be the Department of Education. And if the Department of Education don't have the resources, they have to use the resources that are available. And the NCBI are a huge one.
Well, unfortunately, we have to lose Mary here because of circumstances beyond our control. But Mary, can I thank you for coming in on
our program today?
Sean, you're down there in Waterford. Do you feel like Mary that the organisations for and of the blind should get involved in this?
I mean, we've had this conversation with the department in certain areas. Basically, what seems to be the problem is that the departments are not. Either are not willing to or are unable to, for various reasons, to think outside the box. Mm-hmm. Like we suggested to them that if there aren't people within the country who want to take up the position in Waterford, maybe they should advertise the job abroad, like in the UK or somewhere. And their response to that was that it's not policy within the department to do this kind of thing. And like this formal requirement that you have to have a teaching qualification before you can teach Braille. You know, like, I mean, surely something is better than nothing. And if somebody from the NCBI is willing to take up the post, albeit that they're not formally qualified, you know, if they can get a child to 90% of the education they require, surely to God that's better than nothing.
Can I come back to that in a minute, Sean? But I want to talk to Mukhtar that we spoke earlier about the production of books. And you talked about school and textbooks. Do you do that on request, or do you just follow the curriculum necessity for producing books?
We produce books on demand. We do it only when a child in a school needs it and requests it.
Mm-hmm. And this is in Braille only. I mean, you don't do audio. We're not talking audio here. This is totally Braille.
We produce Braille and large print and text files in electronic format.
Well, that's interesting with the large print. You produce large print as well.
We do.
That's
we produce a lot of large
that's
print.
That's interesting. I want to come, if I may now, to Patsy, because you're part of FAIRC. We were speaking about FAIRC a few moments ago. And FAIRC, as we learned, is Parents of Children with Vision Impairments. Did you not commission research in 2006? For research into this problem?
We did, and in fact there are two agencies involved in researching how children are faring in education at the moment. NCBI have run their own survey, we're waiting on the results of that to come through, and a group called Rahaleen Research are operating out of UCD, and they are looking to how the main things may be holding children back to getting to third level, and we're really looking forward to their results. I'm afraid it won't make pretty reading when we get it.
Oh dear.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's mentioned AHEAD here, Association of Higher Education Access and Disability. Has anybody got anything to do with that?
Well, my own daughter is actually doing a little bit of work with them. She's made it to third level, And as an undergraduate, she's actually trying to bring a little bit of focus to the needs of blind and visually impaired children, or pupils rather, at third level. But Audrey would know about those needs, having been a graduate herself.
Well, hopefully, Thais not trying to reinvent the wheel, because they would be aware, of my own student days, of the needs of blind and visually impaired people. What's happening, I'm not really sure. I would be a bit of out of the loop at the moment. Mm-hmm. But the emphasis definitely wasn't on blind and visually impaired and access. I think, I mean, I know sometimes I feel if there's too much of an over-reliance, I mean, technology is wonderful, Jo, and that's another discussion for another programme, but sadly, the over-reliance on technology is to the demise of Braille. And
well, is it? I mean, we take Mukhtar there. So. Mukhtar, have you seen any decrease in your production of Braille over at St. Joseph's?
Well, you know, if you had asked me this question a year ago, I would have said, yes, actually, Braille is on the decrease. But this year, I know that there are at least 5 students since September have started to learn Braille. And what I've also noticed is that what I think, and you can, Mary Stunden could definitely back me up on this, the most interesting thing is, for instance, a Braille display or a Braille reader, absolutely, where you actually use technology and Braille together. Mm. That's what people find the most useful, in my experience.
But as you say, there's no decline at the moment in the use of Braille.
No.
Yeah.
And the evidence, Joe, is that scientifically there is evidence that when you learn through Braille, your learning is reinforced, that there's areas within the brain that actually light up just like yourself.
Audrey, would you agree with that? I would. If I want to retain anything,
absolutely,
I'd read it, I put it on my fingers.
Yeah.
Listening to a tape is fine.
It's very passive, though. I mean, Braille is much more active and engaging, and I definitely think it reinforces.
Yeah, but you might come across this more, Audrey, because you spoke there about learning French and Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
Did you use it through Braille? Or
absolutely.
Audrey?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Sean, you're still with us in Waterford.
Yeah. There's an interesting aspect to this in our brief relationship with the two visiting teachers this year. One of them, when she was talking about the principle of how Sarah should start to learn Braille, bearing in mind that she's just turned 6 at the time, suggested that she should start on grade 2 Braille.
Oh,
now that was the girl from Cork. Now when the girl from Galway came up there a couple of months ago, she said, absolutely not. Yeah, I should start with grade 1 Braille.
Can I jump in here and explain to people that there are 2 grades in Braille? There's a very simple Braille that one starts, and then when one progresses, mm-hmm, there's a grade 2 Braille, which is a shorter version. But to learn grade 2, you must have grade 1.
Yeah.
Well, it's a little bit like learning to walk before you can run.
No,
it's as basic as that.
Sorry, Sean, I jumped in on you there.
I know, not at all. But like, as a parent of a visually impaired child, you know, who basically knows little or nothing about the principles of educating through Braille, you know, we're immediately at a loss when you've got 2 conflicting professional opinions on the matter. You know, it's just an illustration of the difficulties.
A grade 1 opinion and a grade 2 opinion. Yeah. Oh. Well, that's an interesting point there. I was just astounded. I'm sorry, I was just astounded there when you said that I think you should start with grade 2 Braille. I think most Braille readers listening to this would throw their hands up, or throw their fingers up in horror there, I think. There. If I can come back to something Audrey touched on, and I think it was a little bit thorny there, about blind people volunteering to teach Braille. Mm. There could be a slight problem there, couldn't there? I mean, somebody will say, I will give an hour a week to teach a child Braille.
Once something is volunteered, I think once you have volunteers in the equation, it's very haphazard or ad hoc. I think there has to be something formal in place and, some kind of, recognised, financial reimbursement in the equation as well. Definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Could I also say, Joe, that sometimes it's very difficult, even from the Braille producers, not necessarily in Ireland, but in the UK as well, because there are such specialised aspects of Braille, like Braille music, very often music or maths notation will be omitted because it's such a specialised area.
Oh, I don't know. Mukhtar, on that, would you go along with that? I mean, would you produce Braille music or would you produce maths? Well, I'm sure you would.
We do produce Braille music, but this is the first year that we've actually put in the music part of it. So as of this year, a student will get a complete music textbook, whereas previously that would not have been the case.
Is Braille easy to produce? I mean, years ago they had big, huge machines and people had to know Braille,
didn't they? I don't think it's difficult. I think it's very laborious trying to scan it and proofread it from my own experience.
But it is possible to write Braille now without knowing Braille.
Oh, yeah, yeah, but there's Duxbury, there's programmes to... I mean, Mukta would be more qualified. You don't necessarily... Well, maybe a knowledge of Braille, but you don't have to be conversant in reading Braille to be able to produce it.
What's the solution?
What's the solution? Well, I think there has to be an acceptance and a realisation within the department that Braille is with us and that we have the evidence that it works and we'd like it to be with us for longer. And whether it's a little bit more expensive or a little bit more trouble, we're going to have to stick with it.
Oh, and if I can come to Sean down in Waterford, what do you feel is the solution?
I tend to agree with Patsy there, but I suppose from what's required is the department to think to the longer term. Like if the child learns Braille at the appropriate developmental stage, there will be so much less requirement for additional resources down the way, because the last thing the department wants is remedial teaching and all the extras that go with the child getting behind their educational goals. So kind of a small investment and a small effort at the appropriate stage could pay long-term dividends for the department. But whether that principle, permeates in Athlone is questionable,
Mukhtar, do you see the Braille unit in St. Joseph producing more Braille in the future?
Certainly, if it is asked of us, we certainly will. And if I can come back to your question about is it difficult to produce Braille, it's certainly true that there is software which will just do the automatic translation for you, except for Maths Braille, which is quite an exception. However, it does take quite a long time and a lot of labour to produce a textbook, because it's not just a matter of converting it. You have to go back in, you have to format it, you have to put in page numbers, you have to put in descriptions where the pictures or the graphs or the diagrams are, or you have to put in tactile diagrams. There is a lot of work around about that, and then all the books are proofread by a person who has gone through the educational system themselves using Braille. So it is quite time and labour intensive, despite the software.
But you'll still be doing more of it.
If the demand is there, we certainly will.
Audrey, as a Braille reader, where are we going?
Well, I think definitely it's here to stay. And sadly, though, Joe, I'll have to say, like, from the 90s when I was in university, I was always hearing the same mantra that Braille students or Braille users are, kind of an intensive and expensive bunch of people to cater for. But that's not here nor there. If somebody needs Braille, I feel that, documents should be available in Braille.
Well, indeed, and you think they have the right under the Education Act, yeah.
And we have a constitution in this country as well.
More interagency collaboration, I think, too, as well.
Well, I think that's where we leave it for today. That's been our programme for this week. I'd like to thank our panel, Mary Stunden in Limerick, Patsy Ash, Audrey Tormey, Mukhtar Cooper from St. Joseph's School, and Sean McDowan. I think I got his name wrong at the beginning. I feel that we kicked it around quite a lot, but I still feel that there's more. And I think perhaps there's a future programme here where we might get someone in from the department and somebody in from the various organisations. I hope you found our programme interesting and informative. Also, I'd just like to let you know that this particular programme is available as a podcast, so you can drop it down into your podcatcher. I'm Joe Pollard, and I hope that life is going well with you and yours. Travel safely. Slán.
You've been listening to a podcast from RTE Radio. For more details of our podcasts, visit rte.ie.